The following is a production of WILL AM 580, public radio on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's January the 29th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with John Hester of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And Mike Wolverton from K-State will join us closer to the bottom of the hour to take up the energy markets. In agricultural news, there is a new U.S. Secretary of Agriculture. President Bush neglected the Farm Bill and cellulosic ethanol last night during the State of the Union address. And the AFBF has weighed in with an opinion on the economic stimulus package Congress is discussing. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. And then I'll tell you why using foliar fungicides for yield enhancement could be a risky hedge. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us, won't you, for this edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
On a Tuesday afternoon, futures in Chicago finished like this. The nearby March soft red winter wheat at $9.44, 19 cents lower. May contract at $9.62, down 15 and a half. And July contract at $8.83 and a half, down 24 and a half for the afternoon. March corn futures, $5 and a penny, down 1 1/4 today. The May futures at $5.12 3/4, 1 1/2 lower. And July contract at $5.21 1/4, down 1 3/4. December corn futures at $5.10 3/4, up 1/4 today. March soybean futures 13 cents higher, $12.66 3/4, the final price. May futures at $12.85 1/2, up 13 1/4. And July soybeans at $12.97, a dime higher. November beans, 6 cents lower at $12.22 3/4. March bean meal futures at $3.39.60, up $3. May bean meal at $3.44.90, up $2.10. March bean oil futures, $53.42, even higher. The May contract up 89 at $54.08. April live cattle at $94.75, 92 and a half cents higher today. And the March contract in the feeder cattle at $104.20, the CME group. In the livestock, $1.57 1/2 higher. February lean hog futures at $58, even 75 cents higher. The April futures up $2.12 1/2 at $65.62 1/2, and the May contract at $74.10. $2.12 1/2 cents higher there as well. Outside markets for the day, March crude oil futures, $91.65 a barrel, 66 cents higher at this hour. The April futures at $91.35, up 56. The U.S. dollar down 0.006 at 75.557. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 12,455 is just about 72 points higher on the afternoon.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on a Tuesday afternoon, filling in for Wayne Nelson, is John Hester of L&M Commodities. He, too, is in Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, John.
Good afternoon, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Looks like we're going to be getting a little cold. We'll talk with our own meteorologist, Ed Kieser, at about 13 after the hour about all the weather that's moving through the two-state region. He's graciously agreed to come on the air and talk a little bit more about that. But maybe we ought to start with you and talk about the marketplace in Chicago. How did trade ensue today?
Everything opened stronger as anticipated from the overnight trade. Shortly after the opening, corn was up 3-4 cents. Beans were up about a dime on the opening. Wheat was 15 to 16 up on the opening. Then everything gradually got a little stronger. Then there was a couple announcements, especially in the wheat. I might mention Minneapolis wheat was pretty much limit up like it had been for the last 3 days. And then Argentina came out with a blip that they had added 2 million metric tons of wheat to their wheat production this year, reassessing the frost damage that was widely rumored, and the damage was not quite as great as first anticipated. And then Brazil came out and said they may drop their 10% import tax on wheat, and that basically forced Argentina to open up their corn, wheat, and soybean registry, and at that point in time, the market sold off with wheat being the leader. Wheat went from basically almost limit up to some cases limit down, came back and traded in a range of about 20 down then most of the day. Minneapolis wheat came off limit up in the March, and it gave a chance the gave the traders that were short a chance to get out, but it did end up trading up 30 cents and locking up the limit on the close. The May was up 14, and then the July and on out was up or was down 10 to 11 cents. This probably weighed on the corn market to a certain extent, pulling it off the highs when the wheat market broke. Corn went down 3 to 4 to 5 cents at one at any one given time, and then it gradually pulled its way back up to the D's closing steady to down a quarter, and the nearby is only down a penny, which shows that there's a lot of strong support under this corn market.
Does that surprise you at all?
No, not really. That you mean by
that there still continues to be strong, a lot of strength in the corn market at these lofty levels?
I think, no, it really doesn't, because, you know, they're trying to ration demand, and I do not think, I think probably rationing is already beginning to take place, but it hadn't shown up in numbers and on charts yet where everybody can see it and are still concerned, and you know, we're going into the planting intentions time frame here very shortly, and you know, they want to keep the corn market relatively strong, you know, so we won't lose, you know, any more acres than it's already anticipated.
John, we appreciate you filling in today.
Thank you very much.
That's John Hester. He's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, joining us here on the Closing Mark Report, filling in for Wayne Nelson, our regular Tuesday afternoon analyst.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser, is in the weather office here at the radio station watching a big change of temperatures occur across the Midwest, and he is with us today. Good afternoon to you, Ed.
Good afternoon, Todd. Yeah, this is quite an amazing day. We have all kinds of advisories from blizzard warnings to a tornado watch, some severe thunderstorm warnings, and we just I'm going to do the severe thunderstorms first, because we just got a new warning for northeastern McLean County until 2:45 p.m. That goes along with southeastern McLean County until 2:45, and northern Macon, DeWitt, and northern Piatt County. So Downs, Maroa, Leroy, Weldon, DeLand, Farmer City, Saybrook, Whiteheath, Hayworth, Kenny, Mansfield, Waynesville, I-72 between mile markers 154 and 173. I-74 between mile markers 142 and 167. Also Lexington, Colfax, Cooksville, Chenoa, and Interstate 55 between mile markers 179 and 187, all under severe thunderstorm warnings until 2:45 p.m. So that's the first problem. We have very warm, humid air coming northward, but it won't last long, Todd. We're at 53 degrees now, 55 in Bloomington Normal, 59 in Taylorville, but it's down to 38 in Springfield, 29 in Peoria, 15 in the Quad Cities right now. Temperature in Des Moines, Iowa is 5 with heavy snow falling and very strong winds. They're having a blizzard out in Des Moines right now. The snow has started in the Quad Cities, and the winds have picked up. So there's blizzard warnings out for northwest Illinois. And now I'll let you ask a question.
Will we get snow tonight?
We will get a little bit of snow tonight. I think most of the snow is going to stay to our north, but only an inch of snow, that's all it takes with the very strong winds to cause some local whiteout conditions. So right now there are no winter advisories for the Champaign-Urbana area on southward, just a wind advisory until midnight. But Ford, Iroquois, Livingston counties on northward under a winter storm warning where the snow will be a little bit heavier and the winds a little bit stronger. And a blowing snow advisory from McLean County on up through the Peoria and Galesburg areas through midnight tonight. So those are the areas. The farther north, the northwest you go in Illinois, the worse the conditions are going to be. But with a rapid drop in temperature, even where it rains, the water could freeze quickly. So black ice is probably going to be a problem in some spots tonight.
And how long are we in for this kind of weather? Is this passing through quickly, or will it last for a couple of days?
Well, this system is passing through quickly. We'll be mostly sunny tomorrow, just on the cold side. But then we have another system approaching from the southwest that will likely bring rain and snow to parts of Illinois and Indiana Thursday night into Friday morning. On the northwest side of the precipitation, there could be a band of heavy snow. A lot of it's going to be a mix of rain, and that rain will be central into southern Indiana and southern Illinois. But somewhere on the north and west edge of that, there could be a band of heavy snow. So that's something we'll be talking more about tomorrow as we head into Thursday night and Friday.
Ed, thanks much.
My pleasure.
Ed Kieser, chief meteorologist here at the radio station, bringing us up to speed on weather that's quickly changing across the Midwest.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Dave Dickey's here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the Senate confirmed Ed Schaefer as USDA Secretary by unanimous consent yesterday. The agreement came after USDA agreed to rewrite a livestock compensation rule impacting Vermont producers. Vermont Senator Patrick Leahy had threatened to hold up Schaefer's nomination over the dispute. President George Bush made no mention of the Farm Bill or cellulosic ethanol in last night's State of the Union address, and just passing mention to agriculture in general. The president urged completion of the Doha round of WTO talks and asked Congress to approve free trade deals with Colombia, Panama, and South Korea. Illinois Republican John Shimkus says the fall elections make free trade deals a non-starter.
They politicized election year, it's going to be very, very difficult, and the case has to be made on Colombia about what great access to markets we will have and how our competitors are in there and we're not.
Yesterday, Senate Finance Committee Chairman Max Baucus indicated there will be no consideration of a U.S.-South Korea free trade deal until Seoul lifts import restrictions on U.S. beef. The president also discussed clean energy technology last night, saying the U.S. needs to increase the use of renewable power and create a new international clean technology fund to help developing countries like India and China make greater use of clean energy sources. American Farm Bureau Federation tax specialists say the stimulus package under discussion in Washington could benefit agriculture. Jonna Miller is with the AFBF and she has this report.
The legislation in the House of Representatives includes tax incentives for small businesses that would be beneficial to farmers and ranchers.
Businesses are in a tough way because of rising energy prices, and farmers are no different. As farmers get ready to plant their crops, the amount they have to pay for fuel and fertilizer is higher than it's ever been. If Congress passes this enhanced small business expensing, it'll be a tremendous help. It will help farmers afford the things they need to grow their crops this summer.
American Farm Bureau tax specialist Pat Wolf says the proposal would double the current expensing deduction for this year.
Farmers and ranchers and other small businesses will be able to write off expenses in the year that they have them instead of having to wait and get their money back or wait and depreciate expenses over time.
But Senate leaders were not involved in the negotiations with the White House to come up with the overall plan.
So they'll actually be writing their own package, and we are hoping that they see that farmers and ranchers and other small businesses need help in these tough economic times, and that they too will include small business expensing.
Jonna Miller, Washington.
World Trade officials have targeted early spring for another full-fledged summit meeting in the WTO's Doha round of free trade talks. U.S. Trade Representative Susan Schwab says there is, in her words, a sense of momentum after the just-concluded economic summit in Switzerland. And USDA officials say when the report on 2007 farm real estate prices is completed sometime this summer, it should reveal record high prices. USDA spokesperson Scott Shimin says record commodity prices combined with low interest rates and reinvestments to avoid taxes on capital gains are among the factors contributing to record farmland prices. In 2006, farmland values in the U.S. averaged $2,160 an acre. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find most of our daily ag programming. You can listen to it as an MP3 file directly on the website. It's been updated, much easier to use today than it was just a month ago. Or you can sign up to have that particular podcast downloaded directly to your computer. It's all easy to do. It's right there at willag.org. Now, while you're there, make sure you subscribe for our weekend newsletter. It's absolutely free. Let me give this one caveat. Hotmail addresses, Yahoo addresses, and AOL addresses, along with DTN speed. Sometimes we can get them through, sometimes we can't, but we're still trying. Go ahead and sign up if you can. It's at willag.org. It's a really good weekend newsletter, and we write about marketing. Actually, Dave Dickey, your Director of Ag Programming, writes most of that letter, does an excellent job. Our thanks to Dave for all the work he puts in on that one. Now, up next, last year, Illinois farmers, as you know, applied fungicides to a record number of corn acres. And sometimes those applications were very clearly made for the wrong reasons. I'll have more on how this misuse could be a real financial risk in the future. Farmers in the state of Illinois, and for that matter around the Midwest, called in the crop dusters this past summer to fly on foliar fungicides. The chemicals are used to combat many plant diseases, including some on corn, like gray leaf spot. It's a fungus. The makers of these products are also aware that they can cause a yield increase and make that point in their marketing materials. University of Illinois Extension plant pathologist Carl Bradley says one of the main factors in the profitable use of these fungicides is to be sure a fungal disease is present on the corn crop.
Fact was, in at least the southern half in 2007, the southern half of the state, we just really didn't have a whole lot of foliar diseases in most places in corn. But when you look at northern Illinois, where there was some more foliar diseases, then we did tend to see a more positive response when we looked in northern Illinois.
So corn farmers, driven in part by potential profit and sometimes by good stewardship, made a conscious choice this past season to try a new thing. They paid good money to have a fungicide applied to their fields, and some of them, a little less than half, according to an informal poll taken by Bradley, say it paid for itself and even made some money. The plant pathologist says, unfortunately, it means some farmers will decide to spray a fungicide this season without even considering the risks.
Yeah, that's a question I get. That sometimes people say, well, I'm going to spray no matter what, and, you know, and they don't think there's any risks in doing that. And there are some risks. And one of those is that you may be throwing money away when you do it. You know, that's a definite risk. Another risk is more biological, and these fungicides that we're spraying on our corn, they are either, depending on the product, it's either a solo active ingredient or it's a combination of two active ingredients. One of those active ingredients in each of the cases is a strobilurin fungicide. That's a specific chemistry of fungicide class. That strobilurin chemistry is at a high risk for resistance developing, for pathogens developing resistance to them. And so when we're making these unwarranted applications, we're also putting a selection pressure on whatever disease population we're looking at.
Pressure that may very well select for fungicide resistance. The risk, then, in using foliar fungicides widely across the Midwest on corn is the development of resistant strains of diseases like gray leaf spot. So putting the planes in the air unnecessarily is a short-term gain for farmers that could make them pay dearly in the long run. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from the Archer Daniels Midland Company. ADM, resourceful by nature.
It's a Tuesday afternoon. Time to take our weekly look at the energy markets. Mike Wolverton, K-State grain analyst and energy specialist, joins us this afternoon. Good afternoon from your office in Manhattan, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
And have you dropped in temperature there yet?
Yes, a storm front moved through, and we dropped about 10 or 15 degrees in temperature within minutes, it seemed like.
Well, we're going to be in for a lot bigger drop than that, something like 40 degrees in temperature in minutes. So you're getting off on the easy side, I guess. Tell me about, speaking of the easy side, tell me about what's been happening in the energy markets, ethanol in particular.
Well, I've been out making talks with farmers, and one of the big questions is, will this demand from ethanol production go away, and will we see commodity prices drop because of it? What I'm telling them is that even though ethanol profit margins aren't all that great right now, I calculated today about 6 cents per gallon profit, that we have a very large installed base of ethanol production, and that demand is going to continue because a producer has, or a ethanol plant manager has a $200 million plant, they're going to run it. And so that demand is going to continue, I think.
Is there any reason? The installed base is important, and we've managed to pull that off over a three-year period. Is there any reason that you can see that that installed base would shut down?
Well, only if corn prices go a lot higher than they are right now, or ethanol prices fall drastically. In that case, the first thing they would do is cut back on their corn grind, reduce their capacity utilization. And if the negative numbers get too big, then, of course, they would shut down.
But there is some thought that corn could move to $6. I suspect you don't think that that's the lot higher price. What is a lot higher price for you?
Well, today, the break-even price on corn was $5.23, and the nearby futures contract at $5.01. And so we're not near the point where they would consider shutting down. $6 corn, if ethanol prices fell, would be the number.
Okay. Well, we've got an idea on a number then. As you take a look out, the change in the energy bill or the additional gallons that were added into the energy bill in December, how much of a difference is that going to make over time?
Well, that gave a lot of encouragement to the ethanol industry right now, today. And so the plants that are under construction are being built and coming online. I see that slowing down quite a bit as we get closer to that 15 billion gallon mandate for grain-based ethanol. And there is a lot of activity right now, a lot of work going on trying to produce cellulosic ethanol. And people are just rushing trying to get these plants online. There's still some technical difficulties, and the economics still aren't very good, but that seems to be the next big hope.
Okay, anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Well, I think I think long-term we're going to see demand continue for ethanol production for corn and also for human food consumption and livestock consumption and additional industrial uses. So I don't see these prices collapsing. We may see prices come down as producers expand production in response to price signals, but I think we're going to see strong markets for a long time to come.
Mike, we'll talk to you again probably in the next 3 to 4 weeks, okay?
Okay, Todd.
Thanks much. Mike Wolverton is his K-State grain analyst and ethanol and energy specialist, joining us from his Manhattan office. This just in from the National Weather Service. A severe thunderstorm warning remains in effect until 2:45 for southeastern McLean, northern Piatt, and eastern DeWitt counties this afternoon. The National Weather Service meteorologists continue to detect a line of severe thunderstorms capable of producing destructive winds in excess of 70 miles an hour. These storms were located along a line extending from 15 miles east of Bloomington to 8 miles southeast of Clinton, and they're moving to the northeast at 55 miles an hour. People near these locations are still threatened. Farmer City, Galesville, Saybrook, Bellflower, Ankfield, and Cropsey. We'll be back in 2 minutes to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Now time to take a look at your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. The U.S. Department of Energy plans to announce it's pulling its support for the FutureGen clean coal-burning power plant in Mattoon. The DOE announced its intentions in a meeting with several members of Congress this morning and will make a formal announcement tomorrow. In a statement from Senator Dick Durbin, he's calling the decision a cruel deception, saying it's clear that Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman has misled the people of Illinois, creating false hope in a project that he had no intention of supporting. Urbana Congressman Tim Johnson echoed those comments, calling Secretary Bodman's response a slap in the face and the worst form of bureaucratic arrogance. The department was committed to about three-quarters of the cost of the project, but had recently indicated concerns about the plant's escalating price tag, currently listed at $1.8 billion. Durbin says he and other officials will take their case for FutureGen directly to the president, noting the final decision must be made by President Bush, who referred to clean coal-burning technology in his State of the Union address last night. We'll have much more on this story in later newscasts this afternoon. Illinois State Police have been brought in to investigate the shooting deaths of two men in the small Edgar County community of Chrisman. Sheriff's deputies were called for a welfare check last night and discovered the bodies of 32-year-old Ryan Riddle of Villa Grove and 32-year-old Mark Press of rural Chrisman home. Both men were shot multiple times. Anyone with more information is urged to call the Edgar County Sheriff's Department. Illinois has a new screening program for all returning National Guard troops and a 24-hour hotline to help veterans with combat-related stress. Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs Director Tammy Duckworth says the program is the first of its kind in the nation. She says it will help plug gaps at the federal level and care for soldiers returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. The $8 million program will screen returning Guard troops for traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder. She and Governor Blagojevich launched the program today. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
I hear you have blustery conditions there in your part of the world.
That's right, the Rocky Mountain West, and especially, boy, the northern plain states. The Dakotas waking up to a 25, 30 degrees below zero this morning. That's not with the wind chill. You throw the wind chill in, and there's been some 50 to 55 below temperatures up in those northern plain states here over the last couple of days, and that's some of the cold air that's headed this way.
There is some concern about the hard red winter wheat crop in Montana in some areas. Do they have enough snow cover to manage such cold temperatures?
Boy, I tell you, it's very, very close because the snow there is some snow cover there, but it's thin, especially in some of the key eastern Montana areas. And they have experienced 25 to 30 below temperatures the last two nights and for a third night tonight as well. That's going to be interesting to find out because we couldn't end up with some damages. The snow cover is there in spots, but not very deep.
On the other hand, here in the Midwest, in our part of the world, two-state region, been awfully warm for the past couple of days, but that's going to end, well, right about now.
Well, yeah, it's going to be ending tonight. Some of this cold air is going to be coming our way, and temperatures will go from highs in the low 50s today. Tomorrow's highs, low 20s. So there's going to be a 30 to 40 degree swing in temperature, and it's going to stay cold. We don't expect temperatures to bounce back up to where they are now for quite a while, as some of this colder air that we're seeing out west is going to settle into the Great Lakes and the Midwest. Could see some really, really cold temperatures in northern Minnesota, the northern Great Lakes, as they'll see some sub-zero temperatures.
A little snow maybe to come along with it?
Yeah, especially we see some good chances of snow come late Thursday and Friday. Initially with this front, there's going to be a band of rain showers changing over to snow, but it will be mostly rain before the changeover. It'll be the second system that has the best chance of snow on Friday.
And then better check in on the South American crops for me, either Rosario in Argentina or move upward to Brazil. Your choice.
Well, let's start in Argentina, and rain chances there, not looking bad. It's a little bit dry in some areas of Argentina. They could use some rain. Right now, it appears as though they've got some chances, near average amounts, maybe a little bit above. Especially in some of the central and north central areas where soil moisture is a little bit behind right now. Brazil, well, soil moisture there, except in some of the south central and southwest areas, not in bad shape, and they've got some decent chances for more rain. In fact, the outlook is for near normal precipitation in the next 10 days for Brazil.
Thanks much. We appreciate you being with us, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, joined us here on the Closing Mark Report on Tuesday afternoons, and that is today's report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. And remember, you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports right there on the web. Just go to willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.